Spring into action with the biggest fly fishing gear sale of the season. Jackson Hole Fly Company is thrilled to announce their spectacular 25% off anniversary sale. They are inviting all of us to celebrate with them. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, there's never been a better time to upgrade your equipment and save big. Are you looking for a rugged, waterproof sling pack or backpack to keep your gear dry throughout all the adventures this year? They have you covered. Are you in search of a new carbon fiber landing net? Top quality fly boxes, essential gear like fly lines and leaders? They have all that and more. This is your chance to grab some incredible deals and make the fishing season unforgettable. Don't wait. Dive into the savings today. Head over to jacksonholeflycompany.com and take advantage of this limited time sale.
And there is a whole section in here on dying, edited by Michael D. Radisich. And his chapter 6, that's all it is, man. And he has some super awesome literature. I mean, like, he has a color wheel that he's pinpointing, you know, hey, I want to get this little tiny between red and violet, red, violet, blah, blah, blah. He has all, I mean, that one, it looks like, uses 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different dyes.
That was Jason Miller with a great resource and tip on dying feathers. We are going freestyle today on the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show.
Welcome to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show, where you discover tips, tricks, and tools from the leading names in fly fishing today.
Hey, how's it going today? Thanks for stopping by the Fly Fishing Show. Please take a moment and leave a 5-star review if you have listened to the show and been enjoying the content or found some tips. You can head over to wetflyswing.com/love. This will give you a quick chance to leave a review. And if you do this, you get a free hat and Wet Fly Swing sticker if you send me a screenshot of your review. This helps us grow the show and reach more people and help more people out there. Jason Miller, the Freestyle Tire on Instagram, shares some of his best tips on tying spey flies and D-flies today. We find out who you should be following to up your game this season, where you can find live fly tying sessions, and how to marry wings easily. Before we get started, let's hear from our sponsor. Koffler Boats specializes in custom-ordered aluminum boats and uses the best materials, components, and accessories available to meet all of your fishing and boating needs. Head over to wetflyswing.com/Koffler to check out the lineup right now. That's Koffler, K-O-F-F-L-E-R, wetflyswing.com/Koffler to check out the lineup and connect with Joe. We are walking step-by-step through the spey fly today. So without further ado, here is Jason Miller from Freestyle Tire 42 on Insta. How's it going, Jason?
Good, man. How you doing, Dave?
Good, good. It's finally good to do this. We've been talking about this a while since the show. Or when was that Fly Tide show? Was that like 3 years ago?
That was at least 3 years ago, maybe even 4.
Yeah.
I know they haven't had it the last 2 years.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
It's crazy.
So it's been, I mean, and now we've gone through COVID and we're hopefully coming out of COVID,
right,
you know, soon. But yeah, I want to dig in, just kind of follow up on that. We took an hour and 45 minute long video of you tying a spey fly. I guess, or was it a D fly?
It was, that one was a D.
Yeah, that was a D.
Actually, it was a D.
Yeah. Yeah. And we'll get into the difference between the spey and D a little bit here. But, and I also wanted to get into some tips for people that are interested in learning how to tie, you know, spey and D flies and things like that. But before we get there, maybe just talk about how you first got into fly fishing, that how you brought it to be the Freestyle Tire on Instagram.
I got in basically from my grandpa when I was either 5 or 6 years old. I used to spend my summers and stuff with my grandparents, and my grandpa Henry, me and him would always go fishing. I would be on him and on him and on him to go fishing. So he tied flies, and he kind of had a little spare room, and he shoved me in that spare room where I either loaded shotgun shells or tied flies to stay out of his hair. So that's how I got into it.
That's it. That's it. Yep. So your uncle is he still around?
My grandpa? No, he passed last November.
Oh, wow. Gotcha. So it was your grandpa.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, yeah. Right on, right on. Yeah, no, that's, I mean, that's the thing. You always think back, how did you get started? And there's usually somebody out there that was that person, right? And
yeah.
So how did you take it in? So, I mean, from there, and then the Freestyle Tire 42. How'd you come to jump on Instagram and be kind of, you know, leading the way there with all the spay?
Man, I used to hate Facebook and social media and stuff, honestly. And I'd never, because all I ever saw it was drama, 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 bullshit, bullshit, yeah, bullshit. And it bugged me. And then my wife got me on it somehow. She's like, oh, here's a fly tying group. I'm like, oh, here's this group. Oh, and actually Bob Vavirka, I was just posting pictures of my flies, and Bob Vavirka got me onto one of the groups called the Spay Tire. And then some of the guys on there got me onto the D Tire. And those were, you know, those two styles of flies were in my wheelhouse or my favorite styles to tie. And man, I just kind of hit off from there. And then they're like, hey, join Instagram. And I started doing that. And
yep,
just share, you know, just doing the best I can to share my passion, you know.
Yeah,
that's the way I look at it, is it's just a platform to have guys who like those styles be able to talk and get together and share their ideas. And, you know, I honestly know a lot of guys steal from each other in all those groups, and oh man, that looked awesome, I'm gonna try that, but I'm gonna do this to it. So it's just pretty cool platform to be able to share ideas and get ideas and still be creative, but still somewhat be follow the classic lines of what spays and D's are, you know.
Mm-hmm. And now you're doing a weekly live video on Instagram, or what do you got going there?
Man, I just kind of do them live when either buddies want to jump in and tie together, or sometimes a lot more than Friday night's almost always a video. But I've done videos whenever people want to see stuff, man. I always ask people to ask questions, or when friends want to tie together, we just hop on there and tie together.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, there's no real schedule, I guess you could say.
Yeah, and I mean, it's always the live stuff. I mean, this is live too, but this isn't quite as hard because it's audio. That's kind of the Clubhouse thing, which is amazing, right? I mean, we're sitting here chatting, and we got you know, John and Justin in the audience and things like that. And as this, you know, as we grow, and like I said, the Q&A, there's a chance to raise hands, bring people up, and it's just that engagement, which is really kind of interesting and fun. When you're doing those videos, so you're tying a fly, and how long, I mean, typically are these videos, because these flies can take a while, right?
Yeah, oh yeah. When Instagram used to have, I think it was an hour long limit, so some flies would take, you know, 3 or 4 videos. Now it's there's no time frame. So I think me and my buddy Joel did one last night, and started around 5:30, and I got off at 8:30, 9 o'clock.
Oh wow, awesome! So you guys are going yeah, strong.
Oh yeah, it's fun. It's fun, you know. You know, stuff comes up. Yeah, we do our best to answer questions. Sometimes you miss them because, you know, you're kind of the way that it's being done is it's just a couple of our buddies hanging out, you know, because I don't get to see Joel or other guys that I tie with. Joel lives 6 hours away. Other buddies live in other states. So it's kind of a way to hang out too. And then people can come on and ask questions. And definitely, man, if we see the question, or if, you know, hey, how do you set mallard wings? If I'm doing that, definitely take the time to go through and explain all the details best we can, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And so I was trying to, you know, as I was thinking about doing this, and I'm looking now at the on your Instagram, is it the red fly with some golden, the wing is like golden pheasant? Is that the one you were working on? Or is that the previous?
I didn't post the one last night yet. I didn't. I got them right in front of me. I'm actually, I did a spirit fly. I started actually on a video with Gabe, I want to say Wednesday, and then I finished that one up, and then I did just a little freestyle bug, kind of a October bright off of Deck and Marty Hogan's, or Deck Hogan and Marty Howard's new book. That
yep,
I love that fly.
Totally. I'm trying to think. I just posted something about Deck, a recent from that episode we did a while back, where he talked about the book, but. Well, let's dig in. I want to talk a little bit, just a little more about, you know, spay flies and the difference between, you know, you hear spey flies, D flies, you know, even like yes. Atlantic salmon flies, steelhead flies. So, and we talked about this on that, you know, hour and 45 minute video, I think, but, what is, you know, between spey and D flies? Cause I think there's probably a lot of people don't understand the difference. Is it, it's pretty subtle, right?
Yes, it is, man. It's there. And there's so much more to it, and there's no real rules. And there's kind of just a basic outline because, to be honest, like, I mean, I read a lot of Shuey's work, a lot of Averka's work, a lot of the guys that, you know, have went back and looked at all the spey flies from Gordon Castle and the D flies. And I'm actually, one of the best things about, like, being on social media, a good friend of mine, John Anderson, he's a ghillie on the Spey River. And being able to run questions across him to where you're getting true knowledge that's still there. But the basic idea of what a spey fly is was a fly designed for that river a long ass time ago. Yeah. Is basically what it is.
Right.
And the same for the D. There's the Aberdeenshire D and the River Spey. Those are their namesakes. And there was whoever lived in those valleys had some unique characteristics that were really only held to those rivers. There is some crossover and stuff like that, but if you really want to get into the difference, I basically use them as a style.
Yeah.
For my idea of, but a spey fly typically doesn't have a tail.
Okay.
But if anybody was to ask most people what a spey fly is, everybody says a Lady Caroline. It right. has a tail.
Yep.
You know, see, so there's always little subtleties that kind of break the rule. But spey fly to me is a tailless fly, long flowing hackles, and typically a bronze mallard wing.
Okay.
So if you look at like Knox's first 16 flies published about the spey fly or spey river, the spey flies, they were either, I think a couple of them, I think, no, they were either all bronze mallard or gray mallard type wings. I don't think there's any of those were turkey. Then you get into like the fly called the Dallas. I think that's like the first one that comes in where it has a turkey wing, but is a spey fly. And they are set kind of, I set them low like a jet. I like that look. Some of the old schools, they figurated around the wings, so they kind of were humped up, so they really moved in the river. But bronze mallard wings, you typically now the hackles are either slapping or brown heron or blue-eared pheasant or white-eared pheasant or something like that. You know, long flowing hackles and bronze mallard wings. Is what I see as a spey fly.
Yeah. Gotcha. So, and then it's probably, I mean, and then it's, like you said, it's evolving, right? I mean, as you guys are tying things and yeah.
Big time, you know, kind of nowadays, you know, I tie married wing spey flies. I do a lot of, I try to be creative as I can with them, you know, have ideas and blend in colors and, you know, having fun with it, making it unique and, to the water I intend to fish these flies, you know, I think some people kind of get bothered that if you know, if you call that a spey fly, but I find it the opposite. I think it's paying a huge homage to the tradition and spey flies. You know, if you come and ask me, hey Jason, what is that married wing little thing? And I say, you know, it's a kind of a freestyle spey. And, oh, man, and then that's pretty cool. And then you get into the depth. And as you kind of, as people get drawn into the kind of spey style tying, you know, I always tell everybody to make sure that you go back and look at the history and get your understanding of it. Because it'll help you be a way better tire. Two, you understand where everything's coming from. And three, you're able to, you know, let other people know about spey flies, the history and everything like that. It keeps this tradition and heritage going.
Where would somebody go if they wanted to learn about, you know, some of that history and the backgrounds of what it takes to tie one of these and all that?
Man, I would, Bevirker's book, Shuey's book are awesome.
What's the, how do you spell that? What's Bevirker?
Bevirker, Bob Bevirker.
Oh, Bob, okay. I'll put a link in the show notes when this thing posts for that, and then Shuey's book as well.
Yeah, those two are awesome. And then Colin Ines did a website that's pretty awesome. Something that I use quite often. It's called Feathers, Flies, and Phantoms, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a website, and it goes over a ton of spay flies, a ton of D flies, and, you know, kind of has pictures on most of them and is very historically correct.
Okay. Gotcha. So he'd be a little more historically, not as much of the freestyle.
Right. And so is Shuey and Bevirker. I mean, you know, Shuey definitely has his own style. It really did open my eyes up to it a lot. Like Shuey and Bevirker and McNeese and Glasso and those guys, as I started to get into steelhead flies and see their pictures, that's what turned me into the style that I have, to be honest with you.
That's right. I had McNeese on a while back, and he was talking about, he's working on a Glasso book. I'm not sure if you heard about that.
Yes.
He's going to be coming out with that. I'm not sure how soon it is, but I'll put a link to those episodes as well in the show notes when this comes out. But McNeese, do you know him a little bit?
I've got to meet him in Albany.
Yeah.
Great dude. It was actually the year you did the video. It was the first year I was in Albany.
Oh, and that was your first year when we saw each other there? How cool.
Yes, sir. And then but I had my wife and kids with me, and I couldn't. Dave's like, hey, you want to come over to my house and die? And I'm like, oh yeah.
Oh,
my
wife. Right.
I'm like, man, I apologize, buddy, but I do have to spend some time with the fam while I'm over here. So
that's right.
It sucks, but
yeah. Yeah, that was awesome. Yeah, he told that story. I love the story. He told a couple of good stories, but you know that one about the FBI or whoever it was, the federal government coming to his house?
Yes. Yeah.
Man, he told that story. I was like, wow, is this really happening? You actually had like 8 federal cars come to your house and confiscate all of your fly tying gear.
Oh, dude, that would suck so bad.
Can you imagine that? And
right, yeah.
And but yeah, so I don't know, man. That was, and then Shuey, of course. Shuey's a great guy as well. But yeah, okay. Well, let's. I mean, I'm looking at a few of your flies on Instagram. There's some cool stuff here. It gets me thinking again. For clarification,
yeah.
So you got spay and neuter flies, and then what about Atlantic salmon flies? Like, where is that? Just like similar or a split, or do you know much about that?
Atlantic salmon spay and neuter flies are Atlantic salmon flies.
So they're essentially, they're just a little bit like you said, specific location.
Yes. And there's a style, you know, I would say what most people probably think of when you say Atlantic salmon fly is like, for me, I would call them full dressed Atlantic salmon flies. Once you start, you know, putting super married wings, big stack married wings, you got an underwing, an overwing, sides, horns, toppings. When you start adding all that stuff to it, that's what we call full dressed.
Gotcha.
At least that's what I call full dressed Atlantic salmon flies. And like I said, it's a style. Basically, when I say something like a spay fly, I typically am leaning towards style. And if oh no, that's a true spay, I'll tell you, hey, no, that's a true spay. But I associate the words with style, if that makes sense.
So you don't, I mean, do you ever call your flies Atlantic salmon flies?
No.
Yeah, you don't.
I live in Oregon.
Yeah.
I do call them, I guess I could call them full dress, but I'm going to fishing for steelhead.
Yeah. Although there is the, what is it up there? The Atlantic Salmon Fly Guild, right? The Northwest. There's a, yeah, that crew. I'll put a link. I'll hit that one in the show notes as well. But yeah.
Northwest Tying Guild or something like that.
Yeah, that's we had Joe Rosano was on. He talked about that in the history. Yeah, there's quite a bit of history. A lot of those Northwest guys up there, you know, were part of that group or still are.
Yes, I was hoping to get up there and tie with those guys at some point. I got offered from Ben at Lagerton to go up there one time and meet him, and I was just so busy I couldn't make it. So
that's right. Yeah, I see that a lot. Who's the Dan? Who's Lagerton? What's that? I haven't heard much about him.
Ben, I haven't. Man, Ben's an awesome guy. He's up in British Columbia, and I actually got to meet him in Albany. And then after that town, he just, you know, being part of his pro staff and, you know, just helping him spread the word at Lagerton. For me, it was a huge deal because up until I really got to meet Ben, I never got to use full metal tinsels. And man, it really changed my perspective and my ability in tying, at least for me. You know, everybody talked about Lagerton, man. When I was around, you couldn't get it anywhere. And now it's kind of blew up a little bit. It's at my local fly shop and stuff like that now. So it's just cool to be a part of that team. And I mean, there's some amazing tires, and just being able to rub elbows or talk with some of those guys and share ideas, even though I'm terrible about it and haven't got to talk. I mean, I can't even tell you last time I got to talk to Ben, but, it's just cool to be a part of those guys and use those materials.
Sure. What's your local fly shop?
Ben Fly Shop.
Oh, Ben Fly Shop. Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right. You guys have a few, how many shops do they have there now? There's one, think of the guys out at, not Sun River, but yeah, there's a few around the margins, I think.
Yeah. There's Sisters. I know there's one in Redmond. I think there's two in Sun River. I actually want to go to the other one because a friend of mine at the Ben Fly Shop, I think his father-in-law works at John Olsh. I'm going to mess up his last name, Olszewski. And I've admired his flies and books many, many times. And I definitely want to go out there and meet him and just talk flies with him at some point. Just haven't. But and I know of four or five in Bend. The Ben Fly Shop's the main one. Chris, it's weird. I drive by it almost every day at work, and finally I hopped in there, and he grew up steelhead fished in the same area I grew up steelhead fishing. So we have a ton in common, and man, those guys in there, honestly, one day I was down in the chutes and geez, he was just running gear and he took time out of his day to come down and show me some of his waters. Actually, we were trying to get our buddy Joel into his first steelhead because he'd never caught one yet. But I mean, just awesome people, man. Awesome people.
Yeah, I'm looking at one of your expert patterns right here. The I don't even know what this is. I kind of picked this off of your feed because it looks kind of trouty, but it was from March 5th. Tonight's Bugs. You're on with Joel there as well. And I'm not sure if you know this one. It's got
March 5th.
Yeah, take a look at that.
I'm on here too.
Oh, good.
Fourth.
And it's got like, you got one fly, the top is orange, the bottom one's like bluish purple, and it's
perfect. Those are okay. That's awesome, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, out of all the flies that you have on there, I picked those out. They just kind of stuck out because they look kind of trouty, right? A little bit.
Yeah. And those, the top one is a Karen fly.
Okay.
Which is a true spay pattern.
Oh, it is.
Yes. And the bottom one is also a true spay pattern, just in a different color.
Okay. So true spay, and that means because there's no tail.
Yeah.
And then
Yep.
And what is true the what is the wing?
Bronze mallard.
So there you go. So it's got the bronze mallard and then the what's the hackle it's spun with? Is that also, what are you using there?
It's natural jumbo schlappen. Schlappen.
Oh wow, yeah, that's schlappen, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so
The traditional spays, there was a chicken spay side called a spaycock. And that's what the hackle, everybody kind of assumes, everybody says that the spaycock is extinct. But I don't know how they're chickens. They can't vary that much. So that's what they use nowadays, just jumbo schlappen.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Yep. So, and then it's pretty standard, right? You just have basically a floss body with a rib of, is that some of that? What do you have there?
On the top one, that's the Karen. That's a orange silk body. It's got flat silver, and then a piece of red silk, and then fine silver oval.
Gotcha. And why the silk for the body material? Why not something else that's flat like that?
Silk is this, you can get the smoothest, naturalest, sheeny. I mean, it's, silk is just unreal compared to all the other flosses, man. I've tried a lot of the other flosses, the depth ray stuff, whatever, the old school, is very brittle. Silk is, it's kind of frustrating to work with right when you start off with, but after you start using it, man, it has its own natural sheen to it that a lot of other materials doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And man, you can, and you, when you get the silky smooth, you know, that's where you get the silk, it's where you get the stain from, man. It's, the bodies are just unreal.
Yeah, no, I mean, silk, again, there's a great tip right there. So, yeah, I was kind of hoping maybe to come out of this with some tips, some tying tips or whatever for somebody that, you know, wanted to dig into this more. And I'm not sure if we'll get 10 tips, but we'll kind of work on it. I was looking at, you know, the hook itself. So do you use different styles of hook, or what types of hooks are you using there?
Big time. Hooks are becoming pretty much obsolete, other than like the Daiichi Alec Jackson spay fly hooks. You know, those are the most standardized hooks out there. And to be honest, most of us spay tires don't like them.
What about McNeese? Doesn't he have his own hooks?
The top fly in there is Dave McNeese Blue Heron number 3.
That's it.
Those hooks are, but he's discontinuing them.
Oh, wow.
So that sucks, because those hooks are the best. The Dave McNeese Blue Heron hooks, as far as today's hooks and the Eyed hooks go, you can't beat him. That's all I would tie on it.
Yeah. Is Dave, what is he like, closing up shop, or what's he doing?
From my understanding, yeah, I've heard yes and I've heard no. I heard somebody else might take over. It's kind of up in the air, but.
You should pick up, you should go out there and pick up his brand and start selling some hooks.
What the hard part about it, from my understanding of it, is it, you got to put a lot more money than I have down.
That's it. Yep. Yeah. I guess you got to buy it. Yeah. You got to buy it.
Cause they got to make so many.
Yeah.
When he does it. So,
right.
I guess that's the issue right now. And I think he's just, you know, he just wants to sit back and have fun, and who can blame him?
Hey, I was thinking too, Jason, we're starting to do some things on the Wet Fly Swing podcast where I'm going to be doing some giveaways.
Okay.
And so when guests come up, like, for example, we've got a guy, Matt Ray from BW Sports. He's going to be giving away like a rod holder and stuff. But yeah, if you think of anything that might be interesting as we, you know, when we post this later on the podcast and everything, you know, it might be just a fly or something. We had a couple of listeners that reached out to me when I was asking people what we can do different. And this one guy was like, hey, just give away something. I don't care what it is. Just, you know what I mean? I think even some basic, something really simple would be cool. So yeah, maybe at the end we'll talk about what that might be if we have something just easy.
I have no problem, man, giving away a few flies.
Cool. Yeah. And I actually have one of your flies sitting there. The one you tied is on my board.
Awesome.
Yeah,
awesome.
I haven't fished it yet. Should I get that out and fish it, or should I just keep it hanging?
It's up to you, brother. If you want to fish it, fish it. If you don't, don't.
I would love to catch a steelhead on that, man.
If you catch a steelhead on it, I'll tie another one.
Okay. I'm going to use it this year then. Because it's huge. It's tied on. You tied that thing on like a, what is it, like a 4-0 or something, or bigger?
It's probably a 1-0.
Oh, it's a 1-0.
I think, I'm sure, but it's a long shank.
It's long shank, it's, yeah.
Yeah. So D-flies, that's kind of one of their particular deals is the hook. They're tied on long shank hooks. It's really hard to make a D fly look good on a short shank hook.
Gotcha.
It's doable. It's just tough.
So that's a D fly, and you tied it. It's got super long. I say the hackle, but what is the when you wrap the body with that long material? What is that called? Is that just the rib? Or
that is a hackle. That is a hackle. It's brown heron or swamp crane or stuff like that. That's one thing that one of the biggest things that gets misconstrued in tying, especially with the long hackles, is everybody thinks heron is illegal. A lot of heron is illegal, but there is a lot of heron that isn't illegal. And it's very unique. It's very hard to get, but it's very unique. And it's the only way to get those super long flowing hackles. And you know, what's funny that I find funny is, most people assume that super long hackle, like on that fly with a D fly, as a spay. where it's a lot more common actually in a D fly than it is in spay fly. What sets D flies apart from spays is one, typically they have a tail, and two, it's the wings. The wings are the big deal with the D flies. I think on that fly, they're set what we call horizontally. So if you're looking down a side plane of the hook, if you were to touch the wings, you should only see one fiber, you know, go way back. But if you were to turn that fly and look at it from the bottom up as a fish, you can see a big, big profile and those wings really flatten out. That would be what's called a horizontal D wing set. And then there's another one called a vertical where it's the opposite. The side profile has a really big,
really broad.
Yes.
Why outline. Why did they set those flat? Because you don't see that. I don't think of that very common on flies. Like the flat, is that for a type, the way it swims?
Yes. From everything that I can understand is a profile. And what I'm very particular to D flies myself, and I like to fish them a lot too. I mean, you can take the Deschutes, for example, in mm-hmm. into August, September. I've been down there, and I have not been. Everybody that I just said hi to didn't speak a lick of English. I mean, there's so many people, and if you were to go by all those people, and this is, like I said, this is just an example. But if you go down there, and there's so many people down there fishing, you know, how many of them are fishing a D fly?
Not many.
So. No, if any, you know, it's such a rare, and if they are, they're fishing one that is more than likely a vertical wing set. There's not very many people fishing the horizontal. They look awesome in the water. And the idea of them is they get a lot, they're like scissors if you read some of the older books, Vavrka's and Shuey's book about the historical stuff, is they want them to act like scissors to real move, but that big broad profile, especially if the steelhead's looking up at it, and a lot of movement, man, that's I always assume it's going to work well.
That's surprising that more people wouldn't be using that. I mean, I'm a good example. I haven't used one, but it makes sense because the more movement you have on it, a lot of times, even just with the knot you use, right, using that open knot right. can help,
yep.
you know, and I think that helps a lot too, especially yes. when that fly is swinging around.
I always fish an open knot myself. But with these, you know, even spay and D flies, that's one of the things why I'm part. Something about the length, movement, and flow of these style of flies when they're in the water, to me, I can feel those. And when I feel those, I'm like, man, there's no way a steelhead's not going to eat this. You know, that's just the feeling I get when I see them. And it's weird. I think, you know, for example, going back down to the Deschutes, just because it's here locally and it's pretty famous, everybody fishes hair wings and they're typically not very big, you know? So one of the things that I always feel this is just the way I perceive it. I have the advantage when I go down there or if I'm fishing against other people that are just typically fishing hair wings, because in my head, it makes sense that the only really reason why a steelhead is grabbing a harrowing is out of color. You know, like a green butt skunk, for example, they like the little hot spot, the butt, you know, pink and purple. I mean, the color combinations there are what they are, but, you know, that is really your only attractant when swinging a harrowing.
Right, because there's not a ton of movement on it. A lot of times, just a little bug.
Exactly, and they work great, man. And I'm not knocking them. I'm not saying don't fish them. Shit, I fish them, but I always think, you know, steelhead travel in groups is the other thing I've learned over my steelhead years of fishing them. And I always think if there's one that's just going to grab on color, there might be another one laying right next to it that's going to grab on movement and color. So I don't think that the movement is going to deter that one steelhead that is going to eat on color. He's going to eat both flies, but there might be another fish laying next to it that might get provoked to strike just because of the movement. Oh, I don't like that color, but, you know, it's kind of happening. I don't want it. It's just color. I don't. Oh, shit, that thing's moving. Oh, that's So that's my perspective of the way I, that's why I like to fish them so much, is I feel like I'm triggering more strike provoking, you know, senses of a steelhead.
Yeah, makes sense. Have you ever done like two flies for steelhead?
I haven't.
Yeah. That's the way, well, and I've done it a few times, but yeah, I mean, do one of your big spay flies and then trail off of that a little tiny bug. That might be
right.
Although I usually don't do it because I would get tangled. That's always
that's where I'm
bad enough with the spay rod as it is. I don't need another thing to screw me up.
Yeah, okay. I beat the shit out of every
exactly. So I'm looking at another fly on your Instagram. This one's from February 16th, and this one looks more like it's got a big broad wing. It's got that light blue, kind of like the king. I guess the kingfisher blue. What's this one called?
Oh, there it is.
Yeah,
it's kind of. See, that's just kind of a mix.
Is that a? So that's not a pattern. That's just something you kind of. Yeah,
that's a freestyle tire. That's a freestyle 42, just fly.
That's it.
Yeah. Yep.
So there's no, that one was just like grab some materials and start throwing them down.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of a mix of a spay D and then just, you know, having fun with it. For me, I consider this as a spay style because I would say I derived the ideas from a spay fly, but there's definitely some D in there. The tail and everything like that is definitely some. From a D.
What about that married wing? What's for somebody that hasn't done the married? Are there any tips there on doing that thing?
The tips, probably the best tip I can give you is there's a lot. They're a lot easier to marry than most people think. Any feather, if you were to just, for instance, take a big turkey feather, and if you were to get one of the center tails where both sides are what we consider good, you know, they're both almost the same material coming off both sides. If you were to take that stem and on the left side of that feather, you could take any other feather dang near that there is out there. If you were to hold it next to it and take the left side of that stem, you can stick to each other. They're like Velcro. Feathers are like Velcro. They want to marry together. Some marry easier than others. But if, you know, if you're looking straight down that stem, anything on the left side, if you were to will marry to any other feathers left side, and same for the right. Anything to the right side, if you find good material to any other feather on the right side of the stem and trim a few fibers, they're going to want to stick together. It's not very hard. Setting wings on them is the hard part. That's the frustrating part.
Setting wings is actually tying them on.
Yes.
And are you tying those on individually or the whole thing? How are you doing that?
Together at the same time.
That's right. And what's the trick there? Is that just a loose wrap, or how do you get this stick up straight?
I use a soft loop technique is what it's called. I have tried some other ways, but that just works best for me. I actually saw a really cool idea that made a lot of sense, but I can't remember what it's called, from Joel, that he had a link he sent me. But you're, I can't even explain it. So we just won't go there.
Sounds good. And Joel, remind us who Joel is.
Joel is at Joel Hill.
Oh yeah, Joel Hill.
He's a real good buddy of mine. Me and him talk all the time about all this stuff, and that's a lot of times where I do my live videos with and stuff. He's just a good buddy. He lives up in Washington.
Okay.
We seem to have a very similar view of how we tie flies, man. That's all.
Yeah. How do you get the head on these things, right? That's a big challenge for a lot of people, keeping a nice, neat, clean head. What are the tips there?
Man, it's the head is just, you know, the finishing part, but I use the same tip. The best tip is throughout the whole fly is make every wrap count. I don't like do big open wraps on my flies and my underbodies. I have every wrap nice and touching clean, and I burnish everything in my underbodies. And then when you get up to the head, man, it's, you know, I use a 16-aught Vivus thread, which is really super thin. It's really super strong too. Some guys, Joel in particular, he's had it where when he wraps his wings and he wraps them really tight, he's had it cut material. I've never had it do that, but, you know, I can get 6 or 8 wraps of nice, firm holding wraps that'll really hold my material in, where if you were to use 6-aught or 8-aught, you know, my 6 or 8 wraps is like 3 wraps of that. So I can get a lot of securing wraps, nice, tight securing wraps that don't take up much space.
So you're securing these things. So you're kind of doing the secure wrap, and then wrap back out to keep less wraps up. Are you doing that a lot?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always try to keep it level. You know, as you get to your head, as you tie in stuff and you trim off the fibers, you're going to get, you know, there's going to be some angle there, but I always, you know, back and forward, just nice and flat and smooth. So if I tie my wings in, like my first wrap, my soft wrap is going to be the farthest back, tightest wrap. And then I'm going to work my way towards the eye of the hook. And if I have to attach anything else, then I'll wrap nice and neat back so that it
stays even.
Yeah. So it stays even. So you're not doing a lot of buildup, but you're really spreading out your securing wraps along your materials. The same wrap over the same place doesn't do very much good.
Yeah. So always in a different spot. Well, and yeah. On average, all these flies, you got a bunch of different ones on your feed there, but how long does one take, just roughly?
Man, it really depends. But yeah.
Hours.
2-3 hours probably.
Oh, yeah, so more. So 2-3 hours, yeah. That's right. So what is your number one go-to, like tomorrow? Well, not tomorrow, but when you're going out for sub or steelhead, what fly are you putting on there?
Man, I got a big fly box.
Yeah. Are you always testing out stuff? Are you every day? Are you just trying something different?
I let the river and the feelings that I'm, you know, the things I'm dealing with, let me feel how to what's going on, man. I don't ever have any preconceived notions. Typically, maybe purple, you know, I'll have a purple, but then I go through my stuff and I kind of let them tell me which one to put on there and then roll with it. I could tell you that the last steelhead that I hooked on the Deschutes was on a gold, a purple king, which is a, you know, one of the most traditionalist bay flies that exists.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
You know, so being able to bring a fly that's from the mid 1800s back and hook a steelhead on it was pretty awesome.
And now let's take a quick break for a word from our sponsors. Koffler Boats specializes in custom ordered aluminum boats and uses the best materials, components, and accessories available to meet all of your fishing and boating needs. The Jet Drifter, a perfect power boat for shallow water rivers or lakes, will perform with as little as a 35 horsepower prop engine, but the whole design will also accept larger engines. In addition, the Jet Drifter is also designed to be rowed. The Jet Drifter can be custom built in 14 foot through 18 foot lengths. And I've been rowing Koffler drift boats for most of my life. I remember going down the river in my dad's Koffler boat when I was a kid. And since I have transitioned into the 17x54 drift boat, perfect for packing a ton of gear and still staying nimble. If you need a bulletproof boat that can literally sit outside all year long when not in use and take a beating, Koffler has the boat for you. Whether a jet drifter, drift boat, Rocky Mountain trout boat, or sled, Koffler has you covered. Head over to wetflyswing.com/Koffler to connect with Joe and the family today. That's Koffler, K-O-F-F-L-E-R, right now. wetflyswing.com/Koffler. You support our podcast by clicking over through that link to connect with Joe. Please let Joe know you heard of the ad through the podcast when you connect, and check back with me to celebrate if you end up making a purchase. Now let's get back to the rest of the show. And yeah, Jason, let's walk through this fly again. I want to, because I think this one we're looking at here is kind of seems to me like this. It looks almost, I think of Atlantic salmon flies. It kind of looks like that. It's got a lot of stuff, right? It's got a lot of stuff on it.
I'm actually looking at the real one right now.
Oh, okay. What's the tail? What's the tail? That bend, you know how you get that bend? Is that just getting the right material that it bends naturally that way?
Yes, sir.
It's kind of that bending
That is a golden pheasant crest feather.
Yeah, dyed.
Yes, dyed black. And then, you know, there's a lot of little tips to get them to I like them, the arch and fan out, so they kind of, crests are a pain in the butt to work with. Oh, I walked away from my phone because I was holding my fly. Sorry.
Oh, no, no worry. I'm going to, hey, Jason, I'm going to bring Jason, I think, has a question. So if you have time, let's bring him up on stage here in a sec. So I'm going to bring you up, Jason, but hold on a second. Let me finish this thought. So yeah. And these, like I said, we'll post this later, but if you want on Instagram, Freestyle Tire 42, February 16th was the fly that I was kind of looking at there. Yeah, if Jason wants to come up, we can hit him up, but yeah, it's just a cool, right? So you got the tail there, which is cool. And actually, I guess it's Jacob, but okay. Yeah, let's stop there. Jacob, do you want to have a question here if you want to unmute for Jason?
Yeah, so I recently purchased, I found some eBay, like prime mallard flanks for like zoo cougars and stuff like that. So like the big mallard flanks, but they're all white. And I like to tie in different colors, so I was going to start experimenting with dyeing. So I was wondering if you had any recommendations on maybe brands of dyes or
Jacquard's. If I can spell Jacquard's, JAUQ, Jacquard's. My buddy Joel does a ton of dyeing, man, and that's the stuff that he uses all the time. I'm not huge into dyeing. It is something that I'm going to dabble in. I just haven't got into it, man. There's a lot to it. Vinegar, you got to have vinegar and stuff like that. But Jacquard's, man, I know I'm not saying it right.
Jason, I'll put a link in the show notes, well, eventually for this. But Jacob, if you want, you could hit me up on Instagram and I'll connect you with... I know Jason doesn't have his Instagram feed set up, but I'll connect you with all the information you need. I know we had at least one podcast guest in the past that talked about dyeing. I think McNeese talked about it.
Oh, yes. McNeese is the master of it. He has set the standard of it. I mean, you can't get the stuff. You can't do it better than he does it. He typically does everything in UV, too, from my understanding. Everything is done bleached white and then UV, and then he dyes UV over it. That is the man. Dave McNeese is the man with any dyeing questions. He gets better colors than anybody out there, and everybody is always learning from him.
Yeah, that's right. I'm just looking now. If you go to wetflyswing.com/155, that's episode 155. I had Dave on. He talked about dyeing feathers. And so that's a good place, Jacob. You can get started there. If you have questions, I can connect you directly with McNeese. That was an interesting episode as well. So check that out. But did that answer your question, Jacob?
Yeah, absolutely. I was having a lot of trouble finding, I've tried to find it on like forums and stuff, just information about dyeing. There's really not much out there.
It's kind of a, you know, it's kind of a, how do you say, underground, I guess. You know, it really is. The guys who are really good at it, it's kind of their fly tying. And it's kind of one of those things where why I haven't taken it on is because everything I do, I kind of dive head like all the way into it. And I already have hard enough time finding time to tie. Last thing I need to do is add another hobby, and then the next one I really need to get into is hook making, man. So I mean, I'll never get a tie flat if I get into dyeing and hook making. I mean, they're pretty stringent, you know, hobbies. You know, there's a lot to them. They're not just,
yeah, it's not like just, it's a lifelong, yeah,
you're
thing,
gonna
right?
Go do it. Yeah, you know. So for me, I know if I got into it, it would kind of consume me a lot. But I will say, I also have a book here, one of Michael Radicich's books, and there is a whole section in here on dyeing. I have tying the classic salmon fly, a modern approach to traditional techniques, edited by Michael D. Radicich, and his chapter 6. That's all it is, man. And he has some super awesome literature. I mean, like, he has a color wheel that you're he's pinpointing, you know, hey, I want to get this little tiny between red and violet, red, violet, da, da, da. He has all, I mean, that one, it looks like uses 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different dyes to get that color. But he's very, it's very well put together to where you can understand it better. It's not just, you know, oh, you're going to buy red, violet dye. No, you need multiple color dyes to get to achieve these colors.
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah, Jacob, I'll definitely, when I do this episode that we're doing here on the blog, I'll write up and have links to all this in the show notes and things like that. But if you want to get any of that ahead of time, just hit me up, like I said, on Instagram, and I'll connect you. Yeah, let's keep moving along here. I guess we're kind of covering the, I mean, how do you feel, Jason, about it? I mean, we've obviously been touching the surface on some of this stuff, but what else would you tell somebody that's new to tying spay flies to help them get started? Are there any other, you know, tips and tricks or other resources that we should touch base on here?
I would say it's probably easiest and man best to do is actually tie. And this is just me. I used to be the complete opposite, but now as I've kind of got matured and got older and have the understanding I have now of my hobby, and my passion, I used to never tell people, man, just tie what you want, tie what you feel, tie whatever, screw it, just have fun. And I kind of, you know, oh, well, you need to try traditional flies. And I was like, nah, they're kind of boring. They're bland. They don't keep people's attention. But I would say if you're going to, you know, if you want to tie spay and D flies and become efficient and good at it, now my opinion has changed. I would say go back, look at the Knox patterns, get good at tying those. Look at all the, you know, the old school D patterns, the Aykroyds, the Killers, the White Wing Killers, the, you know, the tartans. I mean, there's so many cool flies. You know, just become proficient at tying those. And then as you become, mainly because those patterns are pretty simple, you know, perfect those and then apply your colors and stuff. And then take, even then, you know, I honestly can say I probably never tied the same fly twice. You know, I always kind of change stuff up a little bit, make each fly yours, but, you know, kind of go off the basis of those flies because of their simplicity. It really, as you perfect those and you start wanting to bite off more, you're allowed to do that because you're already proficient in the basics. If that makes sense, you know, get the basics down, man. Get the basics down.
And to get the basics down, like we were saying, you noted a couple of books. But maybe just, would it be helpful just following, maybe watching some videos, like watching you out there? Is that, would that be just as easy as anything?
Yeah. It would be easy. Like I said, sometimes, you know, me and buddies, we kind of shit talk each other a little bit. So we're kind of having fun on there too. But I mean, definitely, you know, we more than welcome questions. I mean, I think for me, and I know all the other guys that I tie with, you know, the way I look at, man, I didn't get to where I was tying, and I'm nothing special by any means. I'm just a guy who loves tying steelhead flies and absolutely loves steelhead. And what I tie is out of my passion for steelhead. That's why I tie these flies. They're beautiful fly or beautiful fish deserve beautiful flies. That's my theory. That's what I'm sticking to it. I love giving them my best. I tie my best fly every single time. Same with my knots. I try to make my best cast, you know, everything about them deserves my perfection the way I perceive it.
So you're fishing these things, these flies that you're, these amazing, you're not, you're getting them in the water.
Right. Oh yeah. Big time.
When you're fishing those, how do they, are they, you know, if they get some eats on them, are they lasting for a while or are you kind of using them once and done?
Man, if I get a steelhead to eat one of my flies, I've always wanted to just pull the fly, take a picture of the fish, and frame it. It's not what I always do. It's not what I do. And I fish until they can't move.
Yeah.
Okay. You know. But it makes the moment that you do catch a steelhead on one of those, you're never going to forget it. You know, the effort you put into the fly, the effort you put into chasing the steelhead, and the effort when it all comes together, it's something. That's what I'm pursuing, is just, it's a way for me to make memories that last. one thing on life I found out, that's the only things that matter and last is memories, you know? So make as many good ones as you can.
Yeah. And you're doing it, you know, you're doing it your way. That's what's cool about it. I think about, you know, we mentioned the sparse flies at the start, but I've had a few trips where I do like the small stuff, the really tiny, small, you know, size 8, even size 10 steelhead flies. And sometimes those things are getting eaten up and they're losing, you know, the hair wing. And it's just a little speck of a black thing in the water and it's still hitting fish.
Catching fish. Yep.
So I almost feel like sometimes when they get eaten up a little bit, especially for trout, I mean, that, I think that's definitely true.
Yes. With these ones, man, you know, and I'm going for a complete different grab than most. I don't want the little stop, lift up my rod. There's a fish, head shaking shit. I want them to rip the rod out of my freaking hands. That's what I'm going for. That I don't have to catch a fish. All I have to do is touch him and play with him for a little bit. I've been fortunate enough to catch more steelhead than most over my lifetime. I'll be honest, most of it wasn't on flies. But man, I've caught thousands and thousands and thousands of them, and I love them to death to this day. I was just a spoiled rotten kid that learned rivers and where I fished, man, there was a lot of fish around. So I caught a lot of steelhead.
When did you start fishing?
For steelhead?
Yeah.
Probably when I was 12.
12. So, and you're, what are you now? Or how long ago was that? Like just trying to get a year.
26 years ago.
26 years ago. Okay. So yeah. So we're looking, so that's taking us back to the mid 90s, right?
Yes, sir.
So mid 90s. So basically the interesting thing about that is in the mid 90s, early 90s to mid, that's when the runs of steelhead were pretty low, fairly low. Well, they were coming out of a low period.
Yeah.
And if you look at the cycle, you know, it was low in the 90s and it climbed back up to the 2000s and 2005, 10. And then now we're back down to that 90s. You know what I mean? So we're in this cycle and it sucks because, you know, the runs are down, but I believe they're going to come back up and it's just going to take some time. So
yeah, everything kind of works. But one of the biggest things that I think, you know, most people, there ain't the same amount of people fishing for steelhead there was when I was.
That's true.
That's the, you know, I think that's the one thing that everybody has the right to do it.
Oh, you mean there's a lot more people now?
Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? There's just, and they're better at it than they ever have been. Well, you know, when I started doing it and I became a deadly steelhead drift fisherman. To this day, if you put a drift rod in my hand.
Oh, man. You were the drift fisherman.
Man, if there's steelhead around, I'm going to catch them. It's not a matter of. You know, it's just a matter of how many. I'm going to catch steelhead.
Like an egg or corkies?
Corky and eggs and sand, all that stuff, man. Corky and yarn, all that stuff. And my drift fishing background has really carried over into my fly fishing world because it's very similar. It's a feel. It is, you're feeling everything. And you get into this zone. I mean, when I'm really into steelhead, and you know, when I'm swinging a run or I'm fishing a run or however you want to say it, every hair follicle on my body is willing a steelhead to bite on every cast. Every, you're just in this zone, and when I get into that zone, man, it's gonna happen.
So you're not thinking about what you're doing for like lunch or the next day for work. Never. When you're out.
No.
You're focused on, you're sitting there, whether you're swinging or back in the days when you're drifting, you're thinking about that steelhead, what it was doing.
Yep. Every, you know, feeling what my fly is doing every cast. Is it doing what I want it to do? Is it in front of fish? Am I swinging it right? If not, I'm going to find a way to make it be right. You know what I mean?
Maybe I missed that earlier. I was just thinking, you know, in your story. So when did you switch? What made you switch from drift fishing to fly swinging for steelhead?
The feel, just literally the feel. I kind of feel like now, being a, when I was really a drift fisherman, it was kind of a numbers game. And honestly, Frank Amato wrote an article about this and he described it the best I could. It's like your, evolution, you know, when you're a kid, shit, you don't care if you snag one, you just want to catch exactly. one, you know, and then, you know, it's kind of when I was, you know, 15, 16, when I was catching a lot. Shit, if it didn't have a fin, I whacked it because I had to show everybody around on the river that I was the best. And, you know, it's kind of a bragging thing. And now, man, it's not about numbers. It's about doing it the way I want to do it. You know, I live for the grab. That's why I fish big flies. I'm not going to have any of these little, you still get those damn things.
Tips and taps and tugs. And
the last one I hooked onto the chutes, that's all it was, the two head shakes, and it pissed me off and it just stopped right in the middle of the river. My line just stopped and I lifted up like I was in a rock, you know, and you get a couple. I hate that. That's not what I'm going for. I mean, I want them to rip it out of my freaking hands. That's what I'm trying to entice.
You know, I love every aspect. It's almost like the podcast stuff I'm doing. I kind of love it all, but it's, you know, when you get that fish, you know, like it tips it and then the same fish, uh-huh. you know, tap and then boom. And then all of a sudden, then it does hammer it or it's on the next swing or something. You know what I mean? You can almost get all of everything in one shot, but that's probably the, not as common as just getting a slam.
Right. Right. You know, that's what I live for. And typically when you get one that does that, it's a, you know, it's a pretty exciting fight that happens after that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. If it's hammering it, you better hang on.
Yeah. Because you get the jumps and the line ripping and all that chasing, you're going to end up chasing them. I want every time that I hook a steelhead, no matter what type of gear or fly or line, however I'm doing it, I want to have the oh shit feeling the whole time.
Exactly.
That's what I love, that oh shit. Oh shit, I'm gonna lose him. Oh shit.
It's jumping, it's cartwheeling out there.
Yep. That's the chaos, man. I love that. I mean, that's just my place. When that's happening, man, you feel above earth. I don't know how to explain it, man. You feel like you're walking on water.
Right. Totally. Oh yeah. Yeah. You got the adrenaline pumping. Well, let's start to kind of wrap us up out of here. And I want to go to a fly, just one more fly from your Instagram feed.
Okay.
And this one, I think it was recently, this might've been last week. It was March 30th. Yeah. So this one has kind of, again, it's got that broad wing, but you've got a little extra on the wing there.
On top?
Yeah, on top. It's got the blue tag on the back. It's kind of got Well, is that another freestyle that's just totally made up?
Yes and no. It's actually loosely based off of a Childers, which is a true, very classic, traditional salmon fly, or Atlantic salmon fly, or what the hell? Full dressed salmon fly. It's based off a Childress, though, is a white or a yellow body and everything, and the wing is very similar. I just kind of lessened it up a little bit, and how I came about that one, honestly, is I literally get a lot of my ideas by going back and looking at classic stuff. Like I said, that Feathers, Flies, and Phantoms site, I go there and I just look at stuff and I let something inspire me. And on this particular one, a Childers is probably one of the most, Jock Scott is probably the most well-known. I mean, that's the king of salmon flies, but, a Childers is right up there. And, the body hackle on that one was actually is a badger hackle dyed yellow. I didn't have any dyed yellow, so I had white. So that's how I just kind of, man, I'm going to try that fly, but I'm going to do it in my own colors because I don't have that one material and just kind of make it my own. That's how most of the flies I tie come up, man.
And I'll put a link in the show notes again when we do the podcast here with a photo of that one. And so you don't have a name for it, or do most of these, do you name them or not?
I don't name them. You know, a lot of people ask me about names and stuff like that, but I tied a fly one time and they're like, what's his name? And I don't have a name. Like, good thing, because so-and-so tied it back. Too many people do this. And I know there's a lot of people out there that tie very similar to me that just tie because of the love to do it. Well, I can't name a fly. I can't tell you that fly hasn't been tied before. And so there's pointless. I'm stupid. I name my flies like, okay, just, you know, we, for instance, one of the places I grew up fishing, we had a hole we called the Big Rock Hole. That was the name of the hole. So this would be the Big Rock Fly because I hooked a steelhead behind the Big Rock in the Big Rock. That's the extent. That's the extent of my naming.
You have a memory of it. And you can tell on your Instagram because, you don't even have a link out to, you know, it's not like you're promoting these things, really. I mean, you don't have a link to a website or anything, right? It's all on Instagram. And if people want to check it out, that's where you're at.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool, you know?
It looks like I'm busy and I spend a lot of time, but actually I do have a working life.
Yep.
It takes up a lot of my time.
Some of those videos, I'll tell you, and I look the same, man. It's like, I could tell you're staying up late, you know, your eyes are a little red or whatever. And I mean, it's one of those things where you're like, okay, I probably should be sleeping, but man, I just love doing this. So I'm going to like get 4 hours of sleep tonight and just deal with it. Is that ever a day? Do you ever do that day?
Oh yeah. All the time, man. That's why I'm always so damn tired anymore, you know?
That's it. Are you a coffee? What keeps you going?
Oh, Copenhagen and Red Bull.
I was going to say, yeah. So you got the Cope still going.
Yeah. I haven't been able to get that damn habit.
I'm proud to say I love it. It's kind of one of those funny things, but, what is it? 10 years, 10 years. I love Copenhagen, man.
Yeah, me too. I quit for 3 weeks was my extent of quitting. I quit for 3 weeks. Me and my dad, my uncle went fishing, and that was the first time I'd fished during those 3 weeks, and they kicked my ass, and that never happens. And I went to the store after that trip. I wanted to kill everybody on the river. I wasn't in the zone. I was all over the place. I went and bought a can of chew, and I went back down the next day and
didn't
slayed.
Land a fish. You know, the thing about it is that you know, obviously part of it's mental, but you know, you did it for 3 weeks and that's, you're already past the, you know, if you could do it for 3 weeks, then you could do it for, and the thing you realize once you quit is that, you actually are better at stuff. You know, that's the thing I didn't realize.
Bet.
You know what I mean? Because you're not thinking about it all the time. For me, I was always thinking like, okay, when's the next dip? And instead it's not even on your mind anymore. Now it is for a while. But eventually it goes away and then it's not even there. And you know, something else fills the spot, but no, this
I
is,
need
I'm not going to force you to quit here, but, all right, Jason. Well, I feel pretty good. We've talked about some resources. We've talked a little bit about flies, but let's just quickly, I just want to run through this fly and see if there's anything we missed on this one from last week. So the tail on this one is what you have, like two tails, right?
Yeah. It's a golden pheasant crest. And actually it's a, Indian Crow sub. You know, some of the feathers in some of those classics, one thing that should be pointed out, a lot of those feathers, man, are super expensive and super rare.
Yeah, you can't get them.
You can get them.
Yeah, you can get them,
if you got the deep pocket.
Yeah.
But like a true Indian Crow feather, I've got to tie with five of them in my whole life, and they were all gifted to me. And Indian Crow is what they call a fruit crow. It's from South America. I mean, a pair of them is anywhere from $10 to $50.
Oh, wow. For a pair.
And for a pair too. And as if you look at that fly, it's a tiny little feather. Chatterer is a very similar feather like that. And they were very, very common and used in almost all true classic salmon flies. But today's, so everybody, Kingfisher is a great sub for the Chatterer, and the Indian Crow, you pretty much have to dye yourself.
Exactly. That's why the dyeing is so critical. That's why McNeese nailed it, because a lot of the stuff you can't get, but you can dye it to make it look like it.
Yeah, you can get very simple. And to get it to look like the original is not very easy. I mean, it's typically a 2 to 3 or 4 step process of dyeing. You know, you got to dye it one color, then you got to tip dye it or use a little paintbrush and you know, get the tips just orange, just to write it. It's a very intense process.
Totally. And on this fly that we're looking at from March 30th on your feed there, the wing kind of bends up, right, and touches the tail. What is that, a style? Is that something common in a lot of these flies?
In the classic salmon flies and the full dress salmon flies, yes.
Yeah.
It's very common. That is one of the trickiest things to do is to get that top crest on there.
Yeah, to touch it. I mean, you literally look like it's almost fused together with the touch.
Yeah, it's a very cool look, and they move a lot. It's more for us than it is for the fish. But they're really long and wispy. And if you actually look at a crest feather naturally, just on the head, it has a real nice, not very many feathers have the same sheen to it. I mean, it's very similar to seal and polar bear, where they have the natural translucence shine and sheen to it. Those feathers do, they have the same qualities, but they being long like that and over the top, they really move in the water. It's just, you know, subtle movement, I think, is a big thing that I try to achieve in all my flies.
What's the polar bear substitute that people use a lot?
Mostly we use cat. I have a bunch of polar bear.
Yeah. Oh, you do.
So yeah. Most people use
some calf,
calf tail or stuff like that. Skunk, I think, is a,
oh yeah,
is a one. Fox, people use Arctic fox a lot too. Yeah. Now.
Okay.
I'm just lucky. I got a lot of polar bear.
That's cool. That's cool. Let's just keep going on this fly. So you got a little bit of a thin, tag, a silver tag, and then you got a blue tag. Is that, and that's pretty common having multiple color tags, or how common are tags on these fly? Do most of them have a tag?
Most of the traditional salmon flies, most of them did. You know, I think that's kind of where the whole green butt skunk type thing came from. I think people just put it on there as just a hot spot of a subtle color that hopefully that
sticks out,
induces a strike. Yeah. You know, most of them, the silver part is what you call a tip, and the blue part is what you call the tag.
Oh, okay.
The tip basically is 99% of the time you're using oval tinsel, which is kind of square or round. So it basically builds a dam so that tag doesn't slide down your hook.
Oh, right. And the tag is the tag silk?
Yes.
Oh, right. So it's silk, and does that, and there's nothing. It's just, you don't have to worry about that silk coming unraveled or anything, or does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. That's the whole idea basically of the tip, is just to kind of hold everything there. It's kind of just like a little dam.
Okay. Okay. And then
a lot of times, you know, in today's flies, probably the most common tags would be flat silvers or flat tinsels, you know?
Yep.
So it's just a little bright spot back there.
That's right. That's right. And then keeping on this one, you've got a little tuft of something black. What is that little before you get into your body?
That's what we call the butt. And that is that's ostrich hurl.
Oh yeah. That's ostrich. Gotcha.
Most people, you know, I have it dyed in all kinds of colors, 'cause you can have some pretty cool, you know, I really try to blend things either naturally or, you know, or dyed, you know. Probably my most comfortable color ranges is blacks, blues, and purple. I always call it the bruiser color scheme. And just blended them in cool ways or different ways, you know. Either basically like off in nature, you know, everything's lighter on the bottom, darker on top type ways, or just kind of trying to blend things in differently and uniquely that catch your eye. That's kind of my scheme or my idea in all thing, man. I just like blending colors.
Well, and it looks, and that's why this one stuck out. I mean, obviously the wing, but also the hackle you used is kind of, you can tell it's like lighter. It looks like a different color. It's kind of dyed. What is that hackle you used on the body on this one?
It's actually just a natural badger hackle.
Oh, it's just, that's the badger. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, I think in the childers, in a true childers, it goes, you got a little in the back end of the fly of the body. There's a four or five turns of white silk, and then it's white seal. And then right up at the front, it's got a JC orange seal that's just barely up in there.
Yeah. So you have it in there. There's a little bit of orange up there.
Yeah. So it kind of just blends everything. And then, that orange is very close to the tippets, which is the underwing where the black orange and black barred stuff. And then the wing, I think, is loosely based off an actual childers wing of how they did it. And then I believe on the childers, I mean, it has multiple sides. And then the bronze mallard over the top of that is what you call a roof.
Okay.
And then I put, instead of putting, I think on the childers, there's probably summer duck, which is wood duck, you know, barred wood duck. And then it's, I think it had chatterer in it. and probably JC, I just put that Tragopan eye on there because it just kind of has a natural blend to everything. You know, the red really fits the orange, the white dot kind of fits the body, you know, that's just, it helps to have a naturally artistic eye. I'm not going to lie about that. That's the, you know, and that's just my eyes, you know, how my eyes work, I guess.
All right, Jason. Well, let's wrap it out of here. And are you, I guess we talked about any other resources or anything you want to throw out there? Have we talked about most of the stuff if somebody wanted to dig more into learning about this and the history and how to do this right? Anything else we missed?
Not that I can think of, Dave, man. Everything sounds good. You know, same with you. If anybody has questions, message me on Instagram or something. I've tried to help out as much as I can, man. I didn't get this to where I am and the knowledge I have by myself. I've had a lot of help from some amazing people have really, I mean, it's amazing how some of the subtlest things have improved or helped me understand what I'm doing or what I'm trying to accomplish more than, you know, a whole book, you know.
So it's been more people than books or more in person sort of thing, or?
Well, honestly, most that I've ever learned was through books and honestly, trial and error. There was, there's a big gap in my tying. I mean, where I didn't share any of my ties or flies with anybody because of the way I was treated by a lot of fly guys at a fly shop in Portland.
You mean it was not a good experience?
Not at all.
Oh, wow.
They snubbed me pretty hard. You know, I was a 12, 14 year old kid coming in trying to buy blind eyes because I've seen McNeese's or Shuey's flies. And man, I want to tie that. How do I do that? How do I get in there? Go to the fly shop where they had the materials and they kind of just snubbed me. Very arrogant. Very
no kidding.
Egotistical.
But like you're just too little kid sort of thing.
Yeah. Don't be, what are you messing around with this shit for? You know, kind of attitude. And so that was the only place I could buy the materials because back then they didn't have internet or anything like that. So I'd go in there and every time it was just getting snubby. And
I'll bet you that fly shop isn't in business anymore, right?
It just went out.
There you go.
It did.
There but, you go. Yeah.
You know, so until I want to say about a year before Albany that we met, I didn't, if you fished with me, you knew that I tied flies and you more than likely had a bunch of my flies. But until then I didn't share with anybody because, my view, I always, you know, going back to kind of why I fly fish more, when you read a gear book, you know, someone talk about how they gear, it's all, there's no feel. I've always been attracted to the fly side of it. Cause when you read someone talk about fly fishing, I feel what they, when I'm gear fishing, I can feel what they're saying. So I've always been super, that feeling part is how I've always fished. So I could always relate to it. So that's why I've kind of switched over to fly side. Cause that feeling, I mean, there's a soul to it. There's depth. That's not just, hey, we're going to go down this river and wax steel and put them in the boat and be done. You know, that's not what I'm after. That's not what I want. And if that's what you want, if that's what you want, more power to you. There's laws and regulations to allow you to do that, man. Have fun at it. Do whatever's legal and have fun. I have no right to tell anybody how to do this, but I enjoy the feel aspect of it, you know? So, you know, and not being able to, so I'd always be in those fly shops trying to get information and pick up stuff, but just egotistical stuff burnt me. And then as I got older, about a year before we met in Albany, I started sharing on Facebook. And man, when you're getting comments or critiques or information and help and details and stuff from guys like John Shuey, Dave McNeese, I mean, Bob Averka, these guys I knew about that I've never met. I mean, there's a lot of other names I can throw out there that are lesser known that are incredibly talented tires and guys that I admire their styles, man. When they're helping you, it really pushed me a long ways in my abilities and information and everything, man. And just little subtle things, you know, one of the hardest feathers to get in this world is bustard. But I'm gonna, from Marion Wings standpoint, you know, Marion Wings is a, it's not super hard, but getting them to stay together when you set them. A friend sent me a couple busted feathers, man, and it upped the curve of how I learned how to tie them in. They are the stickiest feathers in the world, man. They, you can just use one fiber or two fibers to get a tough material that won't stick and hold together. You can put that on there, man, and it's like glue.
So
it's
almost like glue. So you can use that buster to basically, if you have two hard materials, you use that as a middle one to bring them together.
Yes, yes. That's a great tip. But bustered is, I mean, I've seen a single feather go for $800.
Jeez.
So, I mean, it's like something And a gentleman on one of the spay tires, he sent me a couple feathers and said, "Hey, Jason, man, your flies look awesome. Yada, yada. Here, man, I can see you're learning still and progressing. Here's a couple feathers, you know." So I always want to return that. I didn't get where I'm at by, you know, it's not just all me, man. There's a lot of help and influence behind the things that I do in Thai.
It's a cool community. Where they could follow you on Instagram. Where is another good community? Like if somebody wanted to learn about this, and is there anything out there that comes to your head?
There's a couple of Facebook groups that teach a lot. I don't delve into the true classic salmon flies very much. I pay attention to, there's a lot of groups on Facebook that are around, the full dress, true classic salmon powders. And it's just a finicky crowd, because if you do four ribs instead of five, that's the stuff they really pick at. And I understand what they're doing, because those guys are really trying, they're historian buffs. They really want to keep the history alive. And that's great. And that's, I just use it as an influence, but I understand what they're saying, but I don't follow those rules, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. No, I hear you.
Is the best way to put it.
I hear you. That makes sense. It's not a lot of those.
No. A lot of those classic tire groups are awesome. There's a ton of information, and there's a lot of guys willing to help, especially if that's what you want to get into, is tying those. And there's some that overlap where it's classic and artistic styles, because a lot of the classic full dress salmon flies, guys tie just unreal, just creative freestyles, but they're, you know, got full crest wings on top, bottom, and they go crazy, and they're gorgeous flies, you know, and those are very artistic. And then the spay tire is another one that I'm a group of. Some of the guys get real finicky, and some of them aren't. I mean, you kind of just got to go into these groups with an open mind and kind of have thick skin, that if someone, a lot of times guys don't mean to be dicks.
Yeah,
but they do. Right. They come, you know,
that's true.
They're, you know,
yeah.
I really think that guys start trying to help, but it comes off in a very
dickish.
Yeah. So, you know, but if you go into those groups, man, you'll see a lot of, you see a lot of the classic stuff, but you'll see a lot of the new age stuff, guys coming up with new ideas. For me, they're very inspiring groups, man. I use, off all those groups, I see something different that I haven't seen, and man, I'll use that and put it in one of my own flies, and then make that fly mine, you know?
It's good stuff.
Heck yeah, man.
Nice. Well, I think we're good in the next 6 to 12 months. Anything new you got coming, or are you just going to keep busting out the videos and more flies?
Nothing new coming up. Just hope to get some more time on the water, you know? Kind of April, winter steelhead's kind of rolling around, done, and then
summers,
waiting for summers to come, I guess. I didn't even get to get out this winter, so it sucked. I haven't been winter steelhead fishing in 2 years, man, and it's killing me.
Tell you, well, there's always the next year, the next season.
Oh yeah, I'll get after it. Being a dad's more important.
Yep. That's right. Yeah, that's definitely should be the focus. Cool, Jason. Well, I'll send people out, put a link out to your Instagram, Freestyle Tire 42. And what is the 42?
A football number.
Oh, there
you go. My favorite number.
Yeah, football. Perfect.
Ronnie Lott was my favorite player growing up. Oh, Ronnie Lott. So I
love that
guy. I got to be 42 in high school, and then after everything else, man, that was my number, 42.
Ronnie Lott was the San Francisco 49ers, right?
Yes, sir.
And he was
safety.
That's right. He was the badass safety. Yeah.
Yep. So that's, I always try to hit people like Ronnie Lott.
That's right. That's right. Cool, man. All right, Jason. Hey, thanks for all the you know, information and chatting here today, and you know, everything you're putting out there. It's been great. I'll keep following you and sending people your way. And yeah, hopefully
I appreciate it.
I'd love to get into it a little more if I can find some time. And it'd be fun to tie up one of these flies. I'll have to catch some of your videos. So on those videos, you'll just be on, and all of a sudden you're just tying a fly with somebody else, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah, they're random, man. I don't have a schedule. It's too hard the busyness of life to kind of schedule it. So typically it's like probably tonight I ain't doing anything. So I'll hit up one of my buddies. I did one with Joel last night, and then, you know, hit somebody else up this tonight. Or if somebody hits me up and wants to tie, man, if I'm available, I just, let's do it.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, I'll keep my eyes. I'll pop in one of those coming up here and chime in a little bit. And yeah.
Heck yeah. Appreciate it, Dave. Thanks for everything, buddy.
Cool, man. Well, thanks for all your time. Yeah. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Have a good one.
So there you go. If you want to find all the show notes, all the links and everything else we covered today, head over to wetflyswing.com/235. That's 235. We'll have some good stuff over there for you. If you found this podcast episode helpful, please share it on social media and leave a 5-star review on your app of choice. You can head over to wetflyswing.com/love to do that. That would be amazing. And we're at Wet Fly Swing on all the most of the social media apps. So check us out over there. Instagram is probably where we're most active right now. That's pretty much it. That's a wrap for today. Thank you for stopping by till the end here. Appreciate your support, and looking forward to maybe catching you on the river or maybe online.
Thanks for listening to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show. For notes and links from this episode, visit wetflyswing.com.